This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
You've got your chance at the Russian bear.
Right here, Toronto, June 14th. Koloff, I've stood in line, I've waited, I've listened to you insult me. I've listened to Piper stand all over this country in front of every TV monitor and tell the world he wouldn't wrestle me again for that U.S. championship. And that Koloff had run me out of wrestling. Well, Koloff, brother, the tables were turned because Frank Tunney put it together right here in Toronto. One of the wrestling capitals of the world. Toronto, Canada. Koloff, you and I, the match is made, nowhere to go. Except head up with the Nature Boy. You know Koloff, just like every wrestling fan in this world knows, that Ric Flair doesn't mind bleeding. He doesn't mind sweating. He doesn't mind paying the price. As long as in the end run, he's got a chance to get some licks in himself. And this time, my friend, if you want to be a man, if you want to be recognized as the great Russian bear, you're going to have to walk down that ramp, you're going to have to get in the ring, and you're going to have to face the Nature Boy head up. I'm talking about you and I, Koloff.
And based on what you just heard as we started the show, you know what our topic is tonight. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, not oh, yeah. He might be somebody we talk about down the line. Maybe. Welcome to this week's episode of the NWA Saturday Special, brought to you by the Place to Be Wrestling Network and PlaceToBeNation.com. I am your co-host, Scott Criscolo. Good evening, Dr. G. George Tribolino. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm excited about tonight's show. I mean, another one on the Mount Rushmore that we want to talk about, and one of the greatest of all time.
That is right.
And, you know, the thing is you watch some of this, you know, watching some of the old stuff, you're like, wow, especially in the 80s, this stuff was some good stuff. This is the, what do they call it? The golden age, I guess they call it, of wrestling now.
Well, I suppose. Yeah, I would say that. And that goes for everything. That obviously not just for Crockett, but for, you know, for AWA. Well, AWA was probably more the 70s, I suppose, early 80s, I guess. But obviously WWF and World Class, a ton of. But tonight, you're talking about 80s Crockett. We got a guy who lived and breathed 80s Crockett. We've already done two of the four faces of our NWA Mount Rushmore, Mr. Harley Race and the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes. We thank Callum McDougall and Sean Kidd for joining us on those shows, and they'll be back in the future. Just you and I tonight, because the guy we're talking about tonight needs a lot of time, and we figured we'd hog all the oxygen. So, this guy, I mean, this is a no-brainer. And you heard his voice at the beginning of the program. Why don't I just read his resume for a minute? He's a 16-time world champion, 8-time NWA World's Heavyweight Champion, 6-time WCW Heavyweight Champion, 2-time WWF Champion. He has both WCW's and WWE's Triple Crown. PWI gave him Wrestler of the Year 6 times. The Observer, of course, Bad Skin, Bad Hair Meltzer, gave him his newsletter's Wrestler of the Year, an award named after both him and Lou Thesz, 8 times. He's the first 2-time inductee into the WWE Hall of Fame, once by himself, once with a group of other men who we'll also talk about this evening. He's a member of the NWA Hall of Fame and the Professional Wrestling Hall of Fame. There's really not much more to say. Tonight, on the NWA Saturday Special, part 3 of our 4-part Mount Rushmore series, arguably the greatest human being to put on boots, the Nature Boy, Ric Flair. I want to clarify something before we continue on, Dr. G, to all of our fine listeners. Everybody thinks, just because he's the guy easiest to argue with, that Triple H is my favorite wrestler of all time. Triple H is my favorite WWE wrestler of all time. But my favorite wrestler of all time is this gentleman right here. Always has been, always will be. Whenever I wrote an article or wrote a column on a message board, whether there's Mr. Azaro's in my old Bigelow 34 message board or anywhere else, anytime I typed the words world heavyweight champion and he was it, I capitalized him. Why? Because he fucking owns them. That's why. The man knew a main event. He knew how to bring in a crowd. He knew how to make you love him. He certainly knew how to make you hate him. But you even loved him when you hated him. Nobody.
Well, the question I have for you on this, though, we were different kind of wrestling fans growing up. So I have to say he became more of a favorite of mine after the fact when I was able to go back and watch stuff. Because I think when I was younger and I was in the 80s, I was a big Dusty fan. And, you know, then, you know, got on the Hulk Hogan and all that. But I'm saying for NWA. So it was one of those type of things where probably like into my late teen years that I gained more of a respect for Ric Flair than I did at the time. How about you? Or were you always?
Yes.
Was he always the guy that you cheered?
Yes. Well, here's the thing. You have to understand, and Dr. G is correct. Him and I grew up on different parts of the world. He was born in Brooklyn, but his formative years were in the Southeast. So you had a bigger variety of wrestling to watch when you were younger than I was. I pretty much was WWF 80% of my life. I would get my occasional World Class or AWA on ESPN on at 4 o'clock during the week. But 6:05 on Saturday nights on TBS on the Superstation, it was a different world for me. In my WWF fandom, I was the biggest fan of the baby faces. I drank the orange Kool-Aid. I was a fan of the Orange Goblin. I was the biggest Hulk Hogan fan on the planet. I loved Ricky Steamboat. I loved the British Bulldogs. I loved the Killer Bees. The only heel I liked in the 80s, well, two, I guess, would be Piper and Savage. I hated Andre when he turned heel. Hated him. I was kayfabe in that aspect. I fucking hated Andre. By WrestleMania 6, I was begging for him to turn babyface again. And thank God he smacked Bobby around and strolled off at the Sky Dome in Toronto a babyface again, because I wanted Andre to be a babyface again. But most of my favorite wrestlers when I watched the World Wrestling Federation were babyfaces. 6:05 every Saturday night, I was all about Ric Flair. I was all about Double A. I was all about I wouldn't say necessarily the Russians, but I love Tully. I liked Paul Jones' Army because I hated Jimmy Valiant, so I loved when he had the Barbarian and even broken down superstar Billy Graham. I didn't hate Dusty, but he was the foil for the guys I liked, so. You're going to laugh and you're going to hate me for this, but I actually did gain more appreciation for Dusty when he put the polka dots on. Sorry, that's just how it is up here. You had a different landscape in your wrestling fandom, and I envy you for that, because I wish I had fucking Memphis and Florida and Continental, you know, Fuller and his fucking 12-foot dong, and friggin', you know, and Mid-South and UWF, I would assume at that point, right? 86, I guess.
Yeah.
You're lucky. Well,
the thing is that over time, I think as wrestling fans, we evolve. And then, you know, now you could go back and watch stuff and you have more of appreciation. And, you know, now that I'm kind of going back again and watching some of the the World Championship Wrestling, the 6:05 show, we're starting with 85, which for my new show that I'll be starting on, which we'll talk about later. And I'm really having an appreciation. Like, I'm going back to these, this time in, you know, 85 with Dusty. Ooh, man, he had some great promos. And I was saying today, I think you and I were talking a little bit earlier, that I actually think that, and I know this is a Ric Flair show, but I think that Dusty's promos were so much better. Just during this period of time, it was like April of 85. You know, Flair was good. Flair was the usual promo. I think once he joined up with the Horsemen, that's when he really, I think, hit his peak with his promos. Because those four guys fed off each other. But Dusty was just awesome. I mean, he's cracking me up, and I think I had more of an appreciation for it because you're going back, and as an adult, you really see things and look at things differently than you did when you originally watched it. Now with Flair, I mean, this guy, you know, when he came out, just kind of like we say in the new NWA with Nick Aldis, he looks like a world champion. You know, he dressed to the nines. He carried that belt with a lot of class. He would drive you crazy sometimes. You know, if you loved Rudy for the faces, he would drive you crazy in the things he said. But he made you want to watch a match with him, he made you want to go to the arena to watch him wrestle because you knew he was going to put on a great show. And he just had that way about him. And then when he became a Horseman, again, all those guys had that way about them with their interview skills. And, you know, Tully, you want to just smack in the mouth. You know, he's just so arrogant. You know, Flair was arrogant in a different way. It just, you know, you can't deny the career that Ric Flair had. I mean, everybody kind of forgets that he had like a pretty, you know, at least a 10-year career or a little bit more before, you know, he hit his peak in the mid-80s. You know, he was in the AWA. You know, he was in the Mid-Atlantic. And, you know, you forget that he was a World Tag Team Champion. You forget that he was a U.S. champion. But in the mid-80s, oof, I mean, there was no one better. I mean, he was hot. I mean, he was a true world champion. He defended that belt around the world, and he made, you know, when they said the NWA, the Major Leagues of Professional Wrestling, it made you say, yeah, this is the Major Leagues of Professional Wrestling. Now, again, as we learned, maybe things behind the scenes or the way the companies were run, that obviously trying to compete with Vince, but we were saying even on our previous shows, the wrestling itself was so much better in the NWA.
The showing,
you know, think about Ric Flair in the mid-80s when he was at his peak. If he had that marketing, WWF marketing machine, the Horsemen had that WWF marketing machine.
The Horsemen stuff looked fucking, were ugly, was so ugly. But that infamous picture of Arn, of I think it was Flair, Arn, Tully, and Luger with those fucking sweatshirts. Oh, God, the logo was awful. Absolutely awful.
Yeah, I mean, but think about if you had the marketing machine of the WWF behind them at that time, the money, first of all, they would have made, but just the presentation itself. I mean, the NWA just never took, they just never took advantage of that. If they could just had, you know, Vince's marketing skills and the way, you know, he made things, everything feel big with the NWA wrestling. Oof. I mean, you know, everybody wanted to see Flair and Hogan in those days, you know? I mean, by the time they got to really get in the ring with each other, it wasn't the same at that, you know, than it would have been if they were during their peak time in the 80s. And Flair just, one thing about him, you know, so you're saying, you're right, I watched a lot of territory wrestling based on where I lived. So when Flair came to your territory, he made your big baby face look like, you know, the greatest wrestler on earth because that's what he went there for. I mean, he went there to defend the belt. A lot of times he wasn't going to lose the belt there, but he made sure that he made the top baby face look great. So when he left, that top baby face could have a run for, you know, the next 6 months or a year.
Right. And what's funny is we go to the beginning. He's obviously not from Charlotte, North Carolina. As a matter of fact, I don't think he started being hailed from Charlotte till he became a heel. I think for a long time he was hailed from Minneapolis, Minnesota, which is where he kind of cut his teeth. He technically was an orphan, born on February 25th, 1949. February 25th. Somebody else's birthday is that day.
That's
Paul
right.
O'Neill. Paul O'Neill, that's right. I can't think of anybody else.
you know whose birthday. Actually, I tell people all the time I was born on the same day as Ric Flair and Paul O'Neill. That's an interesting combination right
there.
A lot of rings.
And you go back to
anger,
that.
A lot of anger management.
Yeah, a lot of fucking thrown. there is a ton of, I mean, that class he was in the winter of 71, in the barn in Minnesota. This was Vern Gagne's class that year. Okay. Think of these six guys. Ric Flair. I think seven guys, actually. Ric Flair. Greg Gagne. Jim Brunzel. The Iron Sheik. Ken Patera. Sergeant Slaughter. And I'm pretty sure, I need to confirm this, I'm pretty sure Ricky Steamboat, although I might be wrong on that.
What, in the that class? I don't think he was in that.
Steamboat, class. I think, might have been a little too young. He might be a little too young for this class. But let me see. Professional wrestling career. Went to high school. He was in New York State. No, he said he debuted in 76. So that was a little later. Okay, so not him. But think of that class: Flair, Greg Gagne, Jim Brunzel, the Iron Sheik, Ken Patera, and Sergeant Slaughter. Not bad. That's kind of like the OVW class in 02, 01, you know, 2000, 2001, 2002 with Orton, Batista, Cena, Brock, Shelton Benjamin. I mean, like, you know, sometimes you just get lucky. You know what I'm saying? Here's a little trivia for you, Dr. G. Do you know the name of the guy that Flair made his first official professional match with?
I don't know.
George Ribolino. No, I'm just kidding. George Scrap Iron Gadaski. On December 10th, 1972, a 10-minute draw. Of course, he would wrestle in the AWA for a couple years, bounce around for most of his career in Japan. He would leave the AWA, and for the next 16 years, not counting when he would bounce to promotions when he was world champion, pretty much from 1974 to 1991, Flair pretty much was in Mid-Atlantic and Crockett.
And if you remember when he first started out, he wanted to be like a Rhodes.
Ramblin' Ricky Rhodes.
I mean, we know everybody's heard that story. And you see some pictures of Flair when he was younger. He was a big guy.
You know, he was chunky. He was beefy.
He was close to like 300 pounds.
Yeah, he was beefy. You can see pictures online.
It's an evolution of a character that.
Oh, what a great word, evolution.
What a way he turned into what we know as Nature Boy Ric Flair. And that's the amazing thing is that, you know, the talent that he had and the perseverance. I mean, think about it. You know, he got into that plane crash. What was that? 1974?
The plane crash was on October 4th, 1975. Wilmington, North Carolina. The pilot died. Johnny Valentine was paralyzed from the waist down. Also on that flight was Mr. Wrestling 1. I'm assuming, is that Tim Woods? No. Tim Woods is one. Mr. Wrestling 2 just passed away. I can't remember what his name was. He just passed away. But Mr. Wrestling 1 was Tim Woods. Bob Bruggers and Jim Crockett Jr.'s brother David. Of course, you know, David Crockett, the announcer. Flair broke his back in three places, and at age 26, he would never wrestle again. And he was back in the ring 8 months later, resuming his feud with Wahoo McDaniel for the United States Heavyweight Championship.
Yeah, I mean, the guy has a perseverance and a love. You know, we think about Ric Flair, you know, because of his, you know, personality and the way he talks, and we know he's a big drinker and he's, you know, a big woman. I love his women and all that stuff, but they don't realize you know, you don't realize the guy actually really worked out hard. I mean, he was very big on his cardio, and, you know, he probably was drunk. He went to sleep for a couple hours and got up and started working out. That's and to go through a Vern Gagne camp, even though he's not what's considered a tough guy, you know, the old school tough guy wrestler, he was, you know, to get through that camp, you had to be tough. You had to really, really be able to handle the punishment and the craziness that they dished out day in and day out.
Yeah,
that's how bad he wanted it.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, sometimes we see the persona of Ric Flair. I mean, listen, what you saw on screen was went on off screen. I mean, the history is legendary. We don't have to go into all that here because you know, I'm sure you've heard it in many places. But the other side of it that doesn't get spoken about is that the guy really, for the most part, kept himself, especially early in his career, in really good shape. And really, you know, for all the drinking and, you know, lack of sleep, the guy was in pretty amazing shape, considering. I mean, really, it took many years for it to finally catch up with him when he got sick a few years ago. That this guy just kept going and going and going on a lifestyle that, I mean, probably would kill a normal person, the kind of lifestyle that he lived.
Mm-hmm. Even
Bobby Heenan, as much as he loved him, Bobby was like, I don't know if I could travel with Flair anymore. It was too much for him.
Yeah, no. And that was in 1991.
So, I mean, it's just the guy really, again, I didn't want this to be a podcast. You know, everybody's heard and seen all the videos and everything. It's just good to give, like, different perspectives from our standpoint. And one thing, being a Ric Flair fan, like I said, I've gotten more appreciation as the years have gone on. And he's old, you know, when I've learned more about him, you know, there's more stuff out there besides, you know, when we were younger, just the wrestling magazines or, you know, maybe some videotapes that you might have seen. But the man is just really amazing. I mean, I know, like I said, he's not, you know, he's not a Haku or he's not, you know, that legendary tough guy, but he was tough in his own way to be able to the grind of being a world champion day in and day out. Now, yes, did it cost him some things with his family, and he didn't have great relationships, obviously, with his ex-wives and all that stuff. Yeah, I mean, but his kids love him, you know, and when he was with his kids, he did the best he could, and he loved them as much as he could and did what he could do for them, but he just loved the business. And, you know, he said it in all the different videos, you know, I think he loved the business probably more than anything, even more than his personal life. Mm-hmm. At times. And, you know, now does he regret it? No. But is he trying to make up for the lost time over the years? Yes, he is. He's trying, you know, trying to be there for his kids. And, I mean, the guy just, when you watch that story, was it the ESPN?
The 30 for 30.
30 for 30.
Yeah. Yep.
Really gave an insight. And it's to a man, you know, when you see and you hear over the years, sometimes how insecure that he could be, you're like, Ric Flair? You're talking about Ric Flair? Are you talking about the same person? But people don't realize that, you know, guys like this that are in this business, they go through a lot mentally. And just because what we see on TV doesn't mean that they don't struggle with themselves. And as they get older and they're trying to make it, keep a name for themselves and trying to live up to the standards that they used to have, that's really not an easy thing to do. Obviously, as you get older, you know what? It's human nature. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like an athlete, you know, a ball player. They're not going to be able to do the same thing at 38 that they did when they were 20.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And he just found a way early in his career to just will himself. Because, I mean, think about it. Almost 2 years later, a plane crash took half of Lynyrd Skynyrd. And here's a guy who probably shouldn't be walking, much less wrestled another, you know, 33 years.
Yes, that he doesn't really have that many aches and pains, considering.
He always had that weird lump on his back. I wonder if that came from the remember he always had kind of that weird lump,
yeah.
You know, like Dusty had the coffee pot stain, or as my buddy used to call it, the bump. Flair had that weird bump on his back, which I always just assumed was from the plane crash. Spent the late 70s feuding with the U.S. title. He would battle guys like Bobo Brazil, Jimmy Snuka, Piper. Piper was a babyface, if you think about it. Of course, probably the guy most people, next to Dusty, but Dusty's feud with Flair was very tight, short. It was two solid years. The guy that most people hook Ric Flair with in terms of yin to yang is Ricky Steamboat. And that feud goes back to the late 70s when they were feuding over the U.S., the Mid-Atlantic U.S. title, because I don't think there was technically the NWA U.S. title yet. Because I'm sure there was a U.S. title in Florida, and there's a U.S. title in fucking Georgia, and there's a U.S. title in fucking Amarillo or whatever. And, you know, here's a guy who just kept working and working and knew that his moment was coming. The Crockett brothers trusted him. He was charismatic. He was flamboyant. And I don't think he was a healer. I think it was babyface versus babyface on that cool autumn evening, September 17th, 1981, in Kansas City, Kansas, when the Nature Boy Ric Flair won his first NWA World's Heavyweight Championship from your boy, the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes. Dusty wouldn't win the belt again for 5 years, by the way, but Dusty was doing other shit, clearly. Now, that first reign, and I've been watching a lot of territory stuff on the WWE Network. That first reign that lasted from that night till when Harley Race beat him in June of 83, for the most part, it depended where in the territory he was. He was always a heel when he went to World Class, because you had to be a heel when you were facing the Von Erichs, obviously.
Right.
Pretty sure he was a heel in Georgia. He vacillated back and forth between heel and face when he was in Crockett, depending who, you know, what TV feud of the moment he needed to be with. But then in June of 83, he lost the world title to Harley Race. And 2 weeks ago, on our Harley Race episode, if you remember, at the end of the show, I played the awesome promo. Because this is one of my favorite, fucking storyline hooks, Dr. G. When Harley brought out the Halliburton of money.
Halliburton, baby.
And, you know, $25,000. Pay someone, some thug, to take Ric Flair out of wrestling. I mean, tell me that's not like the ultimate Southern Territory storyline. Paying a guy off to knock some guy out. That's an old school Southern storyline. You know what I'm saying?
And again,
Chad Campbell would be proud of that storyline.
And it's been used, but it's the way, it's the execution. Everybody goes, well, it's been done before. But you know what? If the execution's done right, it's a good storyline. And, you know, like, it's funny because, you know, as I'm preparing for the show next week, I'm like, you know what? These were just simple storylines that were executed properly. You don't have
to
get fancy. You don't have to get crazy with this crazy things. You could do the most simple things, but if you had the right guys in the whole storyline and the execution is good, great, it's going to be a good storyline. And if you don't have to get, like, you know, you don't have to get crazy about it. And I think sometimes that's what happens today. And I know it's a different world today, but I think people overthink it. Sometimes a simple storyline, you know, you just love that, you know, I want to beat this guy up because,
right,
you know what? He stole my girlfriend, you know, that line storyline I want to win the championship, so I'm going to put a bounty on this guy.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's things like that, you know, kind of hooks you in because it gives you reason to want to watch. And it's just, and then if the promos are done properly, oh, you know, come on, that's what you watch 605 for. I mean, you got maybe one main event to show.
Oh, and the rest of it was watching guys like Randy Barber and Ron Rossi and Ben Alexander. I'm trying to think of all the fucking scrubs I'm watching. Gene Ligon and, oh God, who are the other fucking losers?
Mike
Jeff Sword, all these fucking bums. And I mean, most of those shows, Rocky King, those guys would get the shit kicked out of them. But you were there to watch the promos because back in those days, at least for 605, the promos were to put over your local house show.
Exactly. You know? And you know, you knew you were going to get a Flair promo. You knew you were going to get, you know, a Dusty promo.
Magnum.
Depending on where you are in the 80s, then you got, right. You know, you were going to get the Jim Cornette and the Midnight Express promo.
Let's put it this way. A typical 1985 Saturday night show, which I know you guys will be, you're wondering what the show he keeps talking about. Stay tuned. You get Dusty, Flair, Magnum, Tully, Arn, maybe Ole if he's there that week in the studio. The Russians, you know, Ivan, Nikita, Crusher, Khrushchev, Manny Fernandez, who I think is a terrible promo. Chad Knight.
Yeah, he's not that great.
Good wrestler. I'll say this because I've been watching him on the show on my territory watch. In the ring, he's fine. But Chad and I debate this all the time. Fernandez was a terrible stick guy.
He was terrible. I mean, not the worst I've seen, but I mean, he's not great. But I will say this: one guy that, because he's such a miserable SOB, but Ole Anderson was actually a pretty good promo. I the things you hear about him, he's such a miserable jerk, you know. You kind of like, but when you watch him, I mean, and he and Arn together, oh, they were just awesome. It was just an awesome promo. I mean, he wanted to beat the hell out of these guys.
Yep. Absolutely.
Watching them after conducting a promo. But I've gained a little respect, I mean, in regards to his work, not him as a person, because he's just so miserable.
Right.
Ole Anderson, because he was actually better than I remember him being. You know,
we'll hold off on the Horseman. The Horseman will be I'm sure at some point we will discuss the Horseman in depth down the line. So we'll keep a lot of the Horseman stuff.
This is about Flair, and Flair, you know, one thing you could say about him is that when it came time for the big match, the Starrcade match, you know, you knew what you were going to get. I mean, day in and day out, he gave you a great match, but he just took it that next level. That was their WrestleMania. And, you know, I just loved watching him prepare himself for a big match like that, where you knew, you know, you just knew you were going to get just a little extra when he stepped in the ring that night.
No, there's no doubt.
Flair's all about, you know, he's about being the man, you know, he took that seriously. And, you know, he always put on that 5-star match, or depending how your stars are going. But yeah, if you're going to go that way, you know, he's always put on that, you know, A+ match, whatever rating system you want to use when the lights shone the brightest. I mean, think about all the nights these guys go, these hour Broadways. I mean, you can never do that today.
Right. No, not at all. Not at all. And for Flair, in terms of legitimacy, at the time in 83, Harley was the perfect guy to pass the baton to. So it was good that they did that. You didn't want, because you would have had to turn Dusty heel, and you don't want to do that. And so here's a guy that headlined the very first Starrcade. It was the pay-per-view before WrestleMania. A lot of people, you know, younger fans may not think that. Of course, most of us do. But WrestleMania post-dated the first Starrcade by 2 years, or a year and a half, I guess. And on November 24th, 1983, inside the steel cage, Ric Flair won his... And at the time, I thought it was his first, because I didn't remember him winning it the first time, because I wasn't a fan when he won it. I was too young. But Flair won back the world's title from Harley, and at that point, Harley was pretty much done. I mean, he would wrestle into 88 because he would go to the WWF, and we talked about that a couple weeks ago. But his main event run in Crockett, his primary run as a world's champion, ended on that night in Greensboro in 1983.
Yeah, I mean, and think about Starrcade, you know, 83. I mean, again, they predated WrestleMania. But again, when you really go back and you watch the show, you know, yeah, you had the feel because of the matches that were there, and the crowd had a certain buzz, but it looked like just a glorified house show, really, if you think about it. They, you know, the lighting wasn't, you know, they didn't put on that production that WWF is. Could you imagine if Crockett could have figured that out beforehand? You would be seeing a whole different wrestling, you know, the wrestling landscape could look totally different. I mean, that's why, for all the negative we say about Vince McMahon, and, you know, there's some negatives, don't get me wrong, he made wrestling look bigger than it really was. Now, some people down south, they like that. They like that grittiness, and I kind of like it somewhat. I mean, I know Stone Cold talks about it on his podcast sometimes. He loves the grittiness. He goes, I wish they would do, like, turn down the lights and do, like, the old school. I mean, I've heard him say it on his podcast.
Right.
That he'd love to see that a little bit more. So, you know, again, it just depends on what you like, but it's just, that's the thing, though. I guess, you know, Crockett just couldn't take it mainstream, even though you could have. The best way to take that, the NWA mainstream, was having Ric Flair at the top.
Of course.
And he could have done it, but they didn't go about it the right way.
Well, what's funny, let me cut you off for a minute. What's funny about the 80s, and this has to be discussed since we're talking about Flair.
Right.
The Crocketts and Vince McMahon had two different philosophies of how to handle, like, house show gates and stuff. In the WWF, people wanted Hulk Hogan as champion and made them comfortable those 4 years that he was champion, because I remember being devastated when he lost.
Well, New York was always the face territory.
The face territory. And you showed up to watch him. Not necessarily his match or which heel he was going to wrestle. The fans just wanted to see Hogan walk in as champion and walk out as champion. They didn't really even care how good the match was. Now, it's funny we say that, because Flair, Hogan has had some good matches. Again, going back to our flagship show here on the network, the Place to Be podcast, JR and I going through a ton of MSG house shows, Hogan wrestled very differently. See, it's different than Flair. Hogan wrestled differently, you know, in house show matches than he did on, like, pay-per-views or even Saturday night main events, because he wasn't really dictated by the clock. So Hogan could have a pretty solid 12, 13-minute match and pull out some stuff you don't normally see. Flip the coin. Ric Flair, first off, the Crocketts always believed people came to watch the heel lose, not necessarily to watch the face win. So whether it was Dusty or Steamboat or Ricky Morton or Road Warrior Hawk, or when Nikita turned face, or fucking, I don't know, Ronnie Garvin or any of these fucking guys, it wasn't necessarily about who the babyface was going into the match to beat him. It was about seeing Ric Flair and those jerk-off horsemen, although if you thought the horsemen were jerk-offs, you're about to get your ass kicked, lose. And that was the difference on how the Crocketts and Vince made house show gates. WWF fans went to house shows to watch Hogan do something.
Hogan posed. They wanted to see
Hogan posed and vanquished the heel and kept his title. Crockett fans, and maybe Southern fans in general, whether it's Georgia, I don't know if you would say that even in Florida, Dr. G, but most of the let me say it this way, except for maybe Memphis, because, you know, Lawler won the Southern Heavyweight title like 67 times, so who knows? Although he was heel some of those times, he was mostly babyface. Let's just say Crockett for the sake of discussion. That fans went to house shows because they wanted to see Flair lose. They didn't care again who the babyface was. Could have been anybody. It didn't matter. I mean, Dusty didn't hurt. Barry Windham. Any of those kind of guys were fine as long as Flair lost. On the flip side, up here at my home base, the New Haven Coliseum or the Hartford Civic Center or Springfield or New York or Long Island or the Meadowlands or whatever, you didn't give a crap whether it was Bundy, Stud, friggin' Morocco, I don't know, Patera, I don't know, Bad News Brown or, you know, Savage. As long as Hogan walked in champ, walked out champ, and posed, that's all we cared about. The match could have been absolute garbage. Nobody cared. In the South, because Flair was the champion and heels dictate matches, you were expecting your expectation for the quality of the match was heightened. You know what I'm saying? So you guys down South had a different mindset going to a show at the Knight Center or the Sunrise Musical Theater. You were looking for, like, you were disappointed Flair, Dusty. You got screwed on that. I guarantee if we look up that card, Dr. G. In fact, I mean, maybe I'll do that. I guarantee you had a good undercard. I'm going to historywwe.com. Because I don't know if I've ever looked. You always talk about that Dusty Flair match at the Sunrise Musical Theater.
I want to say it was like 82, 83.
I'm going to look it up. Because I'm going to see if – it wasn't Florida, right? It was – I guess you could say it was technically Crockett, I guess. Well, I'm going to go to Jim Crockett.
No, it was Championship Wrestling of Florida. It was the early 80s. I'm thinking – so Flair won the belt the first time in 19 –
Well, Flair won it in 81.
81.
Then he won it back at Starrcade 83, and he held it for a couple – well, except for the 2 weeks that he beat – he lost to Kerry Von Erich at the Parade of Champions.
I want to say it was probably 83 then.
Okay. Flair was champion or Harley was champion?
No, if Flair was champion.
Flair was champion, then it had to have been – maybe it was – maybe it was early in the year then, pre-June. How about this? Oh, look at this fucking map. Oh, did you go here? Sunrise, Florida, CWF. August 17th, 1983. Does that date ring a bell? Ready for this?
I wouldn't remember the date, but...
How about this card? Charlie Cook versus Kareem Muhammad. Scott McGee versus Elijah Akeem.
Okay,
That must have been the Zambui Express, probably.
Okay. Is Superstar Billy Graham on this card?
No. Angelo Mosca Sr. and Jr. against Kevin Sullivan and Purple Haze. Harley Race defended the world title against Mike Graham.
Okay, now that I wasn't at the show.
Barry Windham and Joe LeDuc in a Texas death match. And the main event was Dusty and Ron Bass in a Texas death match. Ring a bell?
I didn't go to this. No.
No?
No, I didn't go to that. So I know Flair was champion. Dusty Rhodes was fighting him or, you know, going against him. My friend's father, whose name was Big Daddy, would have been on the card because that's how we went.
No sunrise. Well, the earliest Graham has is 83. So I'm trying to look. How about 85?
I thought it was my first time going to a match. I know I was. I definitely went to matches before 85.
All right. Well, that was the only CW. You know what? Why don't I type CWF? Because let me go back to 83 and type CWF. Anyway. Oh, what the hell was I doing? Hold on. I closed the thing. Anyway. So the way that you know, house show gates were handled differently in the different promotions based on their philosophy. Now, Flair would spend most of the next 2 years as a babyface. I've watched all of Crockett 84, and I'm into May of 85, and he's a babyface. He's actually feuding with Wahoo was the heel. Wahoo and Tully. So Flair and Tully were feuding in 84. Isn't that weird? Even watching it was weird. You know what I mean? And coincidentally, or ironically, depending on how it works, Tully was managed by J.J. Dillon, as was Buddy Landell, who thought he was the real Nature Boy. I'm sorry, I find that funny. But really, Flair's exposure really took hold when he started feuding with Dusty in 85. That infamous match... When Flair was wrestling Nikita Koloff for the world title in the cage, the Russians were attacking Flair. Dusty chases him off, and then for some reason, Flair's pointing at Dusty and yelling. And then Ole and Arn shut the door and beat the fucking piss out of him and break his ankle. That was the moment that I fell in love with Ric Flair, because I remember watching that.
Yeah,
I remember the promos for Starrcade 85, The Gathering. Starrcade 85 is probably my favorite non-WWF pay-per-view of all time. The matches, I mean, you've got, there'll be at least three, on my GWCW ballot, there'll be at least three, there'll probably be at least two matches from that show, maybe three. That's how good that show is. Maybe Flair and Steamboat was the best in-ring feud, but Flair and Dusty was the best emotional feud. You could argue, if you rank the best feuds of the 1980s, you could say Hogan Piper. There's plenty of others. Freebirds, Von Erichs. Duggan and DiBiase in Mid-South, maybe. But I don't know about you. You got to put Flair and Dusty somewhere in the top two or three.
Oh, yeah. No doubt about it.
It fit perfectly. You had Flair, Rich, champion, fan of all the front runners. Like another reason I loved Flair is that, like, because Dusty used to wear a Celtics jacket, so of course Flair had to wear a Laker jacket. So what are you going to do? Used to say he was hanging out with Magic Johnson. I loved it. It was awesome. that they were meant for each other, right? They were meant for each other.
They were. I mean, he was just. They were just perfect foils for each other. And in you know, they had, even though they were good friends, they had disagreements in real life. You know, they were very competitive with each other. You know, if one bought one car, somebody bought a better car. You know, that's how they were. So, but it was good because I think it made them work well together. That even having that little, it may not have been a where they hated each other, but, you know, there was a little animosity, a little, rivalry, if you want to say, and then to be able to bring it into their interviews and everything. I mean, they went back and forth at each other and just, I mean, those promos are just magic.
Yeah.
And just, it made you want to go out and watch the match.
Now, of course, we, at the end of last week's show, I played the arguably one of the, now what's funny is Flair, everybody has a signature promo. Maybe, I mean, you know, I always said Jake's signature promo was WrestleMania 6 when he said, you know, when he was going to wrestle DiBiase and he said wallowing in the muck of avarice. Dusty, of course, his signature promo we played at the end of last week's show, the Hard Times promo. Flair doesn't have that signature promo because every one of them was great. Maybe the I'm the Nature Boy, I'm the Dealer. That's the term he got. Like, one thing about Nick Aldis, and Triple H did it too, so I'm not picking on anybody, but Nick Aldis snipes some things from Flair because Nick Aldis always calls himself the Dealer. Flair started calling himself the Dealer in 1985. He used to say, I'm the Nature Boy, I'm the Dealer. You know why? And then he pointed at the 10 pounds because this says so. Like, didn't half of you wanted to punch him and half of you wanted to hug him because you knew this fucker is right. He is the Dealer. You know why? 10 pounds says so. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. It's amazing. I remember in those days, you know, for the most part, it was, you know, babyface heel. There was no those tweeners like we've gotten used to today and all that. So that's why I was saying I think I became more respectful of Ric Flair a little bit more after the fact when I got a little older because I rooted for the babyfaces when I was a kid. So, so they did their jobs. I mean, you know, the Horsemen and Ric Flair, they made you want to go see them get beat. That was their job. That's what they wanted. They wanted people to pay, but they had to have the good foil to help it work, which obviously Dusty Rhodes was great. You know, Ricky Steamboat for Flair at one time. I mean, just great opponents, you know, Sting, you know, later on and Barry Windham, you know, he had to have somebody to dance with. Now, Flair also had to dance with some people that probably didn't deserve to be danced with. But he
made them great. The two that always come to mind for me, well, there's three. And why don't we get into matches quickly? Because obviously part of us doing a lot of these history lessons, number one, because sadly the current NWA is on hiatus. We won't get into why. You all know why. So the Doctor and I are doing a lot more history lessons right now, and we hope you're enjoying them. Based on the downloads, you are. And thank you. Keep listening. Keep downloading. PlaceToBe.podbean.com. But we're helping you, and we're doing this on all of our shows here on the network. We're helping you sculpt your GWCW match ballot for next year. Now, Harley, couple matches. Dusty, couple matches. I said it to you a couple weeks ago, Dr. G, after we watched the NXT TakeOver in your house when they did that Flair special. I said to you, of the 100 matches that'll be on my list, I'm not joking, maybe a minimum of 15 of them. 15 out of 100 will probably be Ric Flair matches.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised by that.
I mean, think of the – and I know you and I really only tackle 81 to 91 because that's NWA. After that's WCW. But, I mean, I've always loved the match with Harley at Starrcade 83. I know people piss and moan about Gene Kaniski's refereeing, but that match is still fucking great. If it's a minimum 4 stars, it's got a shot on my list. Him and Dusty at Starrcade 85, maybe. At least one or two war games. The TV match that he had with Barry Windham at the beginning of 87. Remember that match? It's on the one of the Flair DVDs. I think it's January 20th, 87. Him and Barry go 60. You know,
right?
And then you've got Ricky Steamboat. I can think of 5 Ricky Steamboat matches that'll be on my list. 5. Well, Steamboat alone, more than that. Steamboat Flair, 5. All 3 from 89. In fact, one of them could be number 1. One of them may be in the top 3. I won't tell you which one. Obviously, I'm talking about Chi-Town Rumble, the 2 out of 3 falls from Clash 6 at the Superdome, and then Wrestle War. The match they had in 94 on pay-per-view for the world title. And one that's kind of under the radar, and Dr. G, I think you and I may need to watch this match together. It was a show that we did on Jenny and the Gems, Boogie Jam 84, if you remember that show. Yeah, you like that Boogie Jam on the Gems? And Flair and Steamboat, both baby faces, went Broadway.
Oh, wow.
So I think you and I might have to watch that. If for those of you that are listening, I want to watch it, it's on the network under Hidden Gems. Just type Boogie Jam, and you'll find it. No announcer, just to let you know. I know Dr. G hates no announcers, but I don't know. Maybe you and I will record it. What do you think? Maybe we'll do it.
Yeah, why not?
Why not?
You know, you really do get an appreciation for announcers. When I mean, I know when you go live, you obviously don't get it, but.
Well, the big one for me, and I know we're going, this is my only slight tangent of this evening. Everybody is in love with The Last Battle of Atlanta. The full show is on the network, as is the match everybody wants to see, which is Tommy Rich and Buzz Sawyer in that chicken coop thing, and the winner gets to beat the shit out of Paul Ellering, I think. That apparently, and let me tell you something, Chris Zellner, Chad, Nick Duke, all these Georgia guys love The Last Battle of Atlanta. I watched it, and the match is great. There's just one problem. No announcers.
Yeah.
Tell me you wouldn't put. Tell me, and if that match, the Buzz Sawyer Buddy Rich, he's a guitarist, but Tommy Rich had Gordon Solie. Tell me that match wouldn't at least be another star and a half, probably. You know, sitting there, you can hear him inhaling on his lung dart while he's fucking down in a fucking gin and tonic. Hear the fucking ice clanging next to the mic. But. Ric Flair just knew how to shine when the lights shined brightest. And, of course, you know, he would stay in Crockett through 91. You know, he went through the whole Jim Herd bullshit. Could you imagine? Just imagine Ric Flair standing in Jim Herd's office, the guy who ran Pizza Hut. Let's just preface that, by the way. So listen, Rick, we've decided that we think you need to shave your head, wear a large diamond earring, and we're going to start calling you Spartacus.
That guy was a buffoon.
I mean, think about it. You're talking to Ric fucking Flair, dumbass, and you're going to call him Spartacus because we need to advance with the times, because a guy that named Spartacus is advancing with the times.
He's trying to think he was going to be WWF. It's like, really? Come on.
Forget about
freaking,
it.
Freaking joke.
Oh, God.
Oh, Spartacus! My God.
And, of course, he would leave Crockett. And would, of course, spend a good year and a half in the World Wrestling Federation.
What do you
turning
know,
to
I
WCW just, in 93?
He was not the same in the WWF to me. He didn't seem as special. And that's because just the way WWF
they fucked up.
Was.
Well, that's a whole other topic.
Right, I know. That's not for
me. Mean Gene. No, I know. I'm not saying we can't talk about it. I'm just saying that's we've already gone 50 minutes and this topic could go another 30. And I disagreed with Mean Gene. I didn't like. I know you think I'm a homer, but I didn't like when they. I think it's the True Story of WrestleMania DVD when they spun why the WrestleMania 8 match was not Flair versus Hogan. And Mean Gene went, well, we tried it on the house show circuit and nobody bit. That's the problem. You put it on the house show circuit. Ric Flair and Hulk Hogan should have wrestled once at WrestleMania 8. End of story. You don't test that match. What the fuck is wrong with you? You don't test that match. It's Hogan and fucking Flair. What are you testing?
Yeah,
assholes. Come on.
I didn't understand the booking for that at that time. I really didn't.
Ric goddamn Flair and Hulk goddamn Hogan. What the fuck are you testing? I never understood that. Jesus, Vince, you dipshit. What are you doing? It's Ric fucking Flair. You don't test him. We're not stupid. I mean, seriously, the kayfabe sometimes was just so illogical. We don't live on separate fucking planets, for Christ's sakes.
In his mind, it
made sense. You know, we did read PWI, Vince. Sorry that the WWF magazine was not the only magazine, wrestling magazine in the world. Jesus fucking Christ. You save Hulk Hogan and Ric Flair for one match. April 5th, 1992, Hoosier Dome, Indianapolis. End of story. Now, do we regret getting Flair Savage? No, because Flair Savage is fucking awesome. Do we regret Hogan Sid? That match could have been better if Papa Shango ran to the ring on time, but that's a different story. But
that could have been a lot better.
But why do you have to? I mean, I know we're off the path here because we're not talking NWA, but that this whole thing about the Mean Gene, we tested the match and it didn't do well in Oakland. Oakland? What the fuck are you doing in Oakland? Come on. You guys totally botched that. Totally botched it. If you do one, see, even Commander's pissed. If you do one Hogan Flair match, you do it April 5th, 1992, in front of 80,000 people at the fucking Hoosier Dome. Jesus Christ. Idiots.
Wow. You go wound up tonight.
See, you call me a fucking homer. Here I am, criticizing the WWF for doing something stupid. We need to test a Ric Flair match market. Are you on drugs? Really? You have to test market Ric Flair and Hulk Hogan. Are you on fucking drugs? Idiots. Anyway, I digress.
No,
great.
It was cool when he came in with the, the big gold belt when they were able to do that part of it. But it just didn't seem the same.
No, there was something was different. I agree. There was something different. But I remember my brother throwing pretzels at me and, like, you know, mooning me in his fucking bony ass at the 92 Rumble when Flair won. And, you know, Flair was his guy. And I was pissed because I didn't even want Hogan to win that Rumble. I wanted Sid to win that Rumble. Something was different. But I did like, come on, the trio of Bobby, Flair, and Perfect was really great. Come on. It was pretty good.
It was.
Bobby, Flair, and Hogan was really good. I mean, Bobby Flair and Perfect was really good. They fit. Flair has always said in interviews that Bobby was always the fifth horseman. So anyway, we'll keep talking Ric Flair down the line because.
Yeah, I mean, you could really, you could do two shows on this. You could do five shows.
Right. We could do part one and part two on Flair. But we're going to talk about Flair in other capacities in future episodes, whether it's feuds or whether it's factions.
Let's hope that we'll get some news soon on the current NWA because we want that back.
Oh, of course we do. Of course we do.
But this has been fun.
There right now, and we
should be able to do this.
We pray to Billy and the guys at Lightning One and at the NWA. Hopefully everything's doing okay, and we're here. We haven't left. Because they haven't posted anything in over a week and a half. But we're here. We're not leaving. We're just giving you some history lessons. Simple as that. Because we're good at that.
Exactly. Speaking of history, we got something coming up.
We do. Before we wrap things up, and we'll end the show with a Flair promo. Two things. We're going to announce our next week's show, which is a little different. We'll get to that in a second. But before we do that, Dr. G, of course, our good friend Sean Kidd was on our show last week. You have an announcement to make.
That's right. No. So we're gonna be doing our first recording. Since you are the purveyor of the Place to Be Wrestling feed, I don't know when you're gonna premiere our show. So
well,
you're the boss. So you
stop talking
me
about semantics. We don't worry about semantics.
Well,
here.
If I'm gonna promote it, I want to tell people when it's.
Well, we'll let you know when it's there. Just announce what the show is, and then I'll announce when. We got time.
It's going to be called NWA Croc and Roll. So we're gonna take a little trip down memory lane, starting in 1985. April of 85, to be exact. And with the we're going to do the month of April, starting off with the NWA, you know, World Championship Wrestling Saturday Night program, and kind of break down the different programs with the feuds as they go along for that month. And I'm just enjoying watching these shows. I tell you, I never realized, you know, again, when you watch it from a different perspective, and I've watched some of the shows here and there, little bits here and there, you know, like you always throw something on when you're going to sleep or something like that. But because now I'm concentrating on it a little more, and I'm like, I'm really enjoying this. We're, you know, we have a little chat going and we're going back and forth with each other. We're like, wow, this stuff is really good. We got to save it for the show, you know, because
I do that all the time on Mondays. When I'm watching our Place Be podcast, me, JR, and whoever, depending the guest is on that night, I get into modes and stuff. It's very hard, but I am very excited. You, Sean Kidd, you guys are the bona fide co-hosts, and you'll be rotating guests down the line too. I'm excited. Another great show.
We're gonna have Callum on. Callum McDougal.
Callum McDougal.
Yep, they're gonna be on. And Jacob Williams is going to be on as well. So we're looking forward to that. We're going to break things down. You know, we're going to have some fun with it. I'm sure we'll tweak things as we go along. This is not my creation. This is Sean Kidd. So I don't want to take any kind of credit in that aspect. He came up with the creation based on our show, like he mentioned last week. Mm-hmm. And he asked me if I would like to be a part of it. And I said, I would love to be a part of it. I really enjoyed having him on the show last week, so it'll be really nice to be able to work with him. And I think we're going to do this podcast basically from like April of 85 to like November 88, which is really, I think, the key moments
absolutely.
NWA at that time.
No, absolutely. Because by 89, that's a good bookmark for you guys, because by 89, it starts looking a little bit more and more like Ted Turner's influence kicks in. So and they start mentioning the term WCW.
If you want to kind of prepare for the show, if you want to see what we're talking about, we're going to be doing – so if you could go on, you can go on YouTube and you could go to, you know, the World Championship Wrestling shows from April of 85, and I believe the first show that we're starting is, I believe, April 13th, 1985.
Okay.
So if you do that and you just watch it, because we're going to break them down, and it's just really phenomenal stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I apologize. I'm an idiot tonight. You can tell it's late when we're recording this. It's April 6th. So you're going to start with the April 6th show. Then you do like the 13th, the 20th, and the 27th. So look them up on YouTube, NWA World Championship Wrestling. Put those dates in, starting with 4/6/85. You're not going to be disappointed. We're going to break down some of the key parts of the show. But when you watch just this, it's simple booking, but it just gets you hooked. And it's like you're watching it for the first time.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, I know I watched it at that time, but, you know, obviously you don't remember every little thing. So we're really looking forward to it. And we're happy to be on the Place to Be Wrestling Network, another show added to this wonderful network.
Absolutely. Full of shows. Very excited. Very excited.
You know, I'm sure we'll have you on at some point. So
yeah,
you got to be on every show. So
well, I'm trying to do like the John Cena kind of rock part-time. No, I'm not retiring. I'm like Ric Flair. I will never well, no, I am going to retire.
We'll stroke your ego a little bit. Put you on.
Oh, please.
Say
my ego.
Or,
seriously, you Southern hillbilly. Yeah, right. Why don't you go back to the Sunrise Musical Theater and buy another Coke that your dad gets knocked out of his hand and he gets all pissed off.
Oh, man.
Anyway.
Sullivan, and he loved Kevin Sullivan. Kevin Sullivan I think it was Mike Davis, he was a wrestler, you know, at the time, onto my Coke. And my dad, who loved Kevin Sullivan, was yelling at him, like, I gotta pay, you're gonna give me the $6 for this freaking Coke?
$6?
Whatever.
Of course, it's only
$2,
but we know your dad.
Yeah.
So
he's even trying to rob the wrestlers, but no, I could tell you guys stories, you know, going back to those days like crazy, which I will throughout the time. But please listen to the podcast. We'll So yeah, whenever the boss here says that it could be released onto the network, it'll be there.
My God, you're like the biggest. You're like the for a guy who loves kayfabe. You just bust all kayfabe. You're telling people when I have to schedule shows. Stay on the hallway, will you? Read highlights or Ebony or whatever magazine.
You know me. I'm like the marketing guy. You know, when we're in the nights together, I do all the PR and all that. If I'm going to tell somebody to listen to a show, they got to know when to listen to it, right?
Well, that's my job. Your job's just to sit and talk about Ric Flair and the Ding Dongs, okay, and the Mulkies. That's your job. Talk about the Mulkies. Anyway,
I'm going to do it with you.
That's our first announcement. So, Crock and Roll. That's going to be that's the new show here on the Place to Be Wrestling Network. The Dr. G, George Abellino, Jim Crock and Roll. And I'll talk to our good friend JJ, and we'll get a nice logo. And we're looking forward to that. The other news before we wrap up is next week's show. Now, originally, we were going to conclude our four-part series on the NWA, our NWA Mount Rushmore. But then I realized next Saturday is the 4th of July, Independence Day. And I said to myself, number one, we were going to try and have a roundtable, and we were all going to discuss our choices, who we think should be the fourth face with Harley, Dusty, and Rick. But then I realized it's a holiday. It'd be tough to get people. Well, why don't we wait? And then I thought to myself, wait a minute, 4th of July? I got a new topic. So, in 2 weeks, the episode that will premiere on Saturday morning, July 11th, is when we will have our roundtable to conclude our NWA Mount Rushmore. We don't know who we'll have on, but we'll do that. Next week, on the 4th of July morning episode of the NWA Saturday special, if we're talking 4th of July, what could we be talking about? That's right. The legacy of the Great American Bash. Yes, not the pay-per-views, although we'll talk about the pay-per-views. What Dr. and I are going to talk about next week is the thought process. And, of course, it's a Dusty idea. And the thought of, like, revolutionary idea of touring outdoor stadiums. Whoever thought to fucking do that? Yeah, you had one shots, but not a tour of outdoor stadiums. I mean, really? Yeah.
With country bands opening up.
Yeah, country bands, David Allen Coe, Dusty's Boy, Harry Gant, the bandit was probably there. Plenty of actors, actresses, Dukes of Hazzard probably, who knows. And great matches. It's where War Games started.
And this is why, folks, they pay him the big bucks here at the Place to Be Wrestling Network.
That's right. I make them and I spend them. I earn them and I spend them. So next week on the NWA Saturday special, our 4th of July episode, we will talk the legacy of the Great American Bash. And in 2 weeks, on July 11th, when it premieres on the feed, we will have our roundtable to discuss who we think the fourth face on the NWA Mount Rushmore will be. And maybe by mid-July, we'll start getting some news from Billy Corgan and the current NWA on what the scoop is. So, hope you enjoyed this. Thank you again. Keep downloading. Follow me on Twitter at PTBPodFather. Follow him on Twitter at KFC14360. Don't ask what the number means. And check out all the great shows on the Place to Be Wrestling Network from the Place to Be Podcast, Main Event. Are some of our new shows, Wrestling's Chicken Salad, Highway to the Impact Zone, Senior Video. And, of course, our weekend shows, Special Relations, Jenny and the Gems, Talking WCW, all the tremendous shows here on the feed. Of course, the Place to Be Nation Pop feed, Dr. and I have a show on there. We'll be actually recording this week. And, of course, our sister and brother feeds on the other side of the quad, the Jenny Position and the No So Connection Podcast Network. Check those guys out, too, JR and company. Have a good week. Talk to you on the 4th of July from Charlotte, Miami, Philadelphia, wherever the Bash Tour takes us. I'm Scott. He's the doctor. You're not.
To be the man, you got to beat the man. Ciao.
The reaction is for only one man, the heavyweight champion of the world, Nature Boy Ric Flair.
Silence has no fighting. You know, today has got to be a sad day in the home of Mama Catherine in Houston, Texas. Because Mama Catherine, your boy, I'm talking about the dream, Big Dust, no longer is a recognized national champion, in the National Wrestling Alliance. So, as you can see, the new array of talent goes like this: Jimmy Cornette, the Midnight Express, World Tag Team Champion. Tully Blanchard, new National Heavyweight Champion, managed by the great James J. Dillon. Then, right here, is Ric Flair, who just happens to be made, custom made, if you may, from head to toe. Now, Ronnie Garvin doesn't have a belt. You know what? In this sport, if you don't have a belt, you're like a man without a country. That's right. So, Ronnie Garvin, I love it. Big Dust, you got no belt. You got no life. You got nothing to brag about, nothing to stand on. And when I get to Cincinnati, Dusty Rhodes, we're going to finish it off. Because you not only will be without a belt, you'll be without a leg. And baby doll, if you stick your nose in my business, I'm going to break your leg too. Ronnie Garvin, hands of stone. Woo! Such a bad apple. Let me tell you something, Garvin. Atlanta, Georgia, my kind of town. And after I beat you up in Atlanta, me and my good buddy, Tim Ecclestone, I'm going to be at Timothy John. And I'm going to rock my rear end right off. Because I'm going to have JD on my left and Mary on my right. But I'm not going to tell any woman here who I'm going to be with till around midnight. The Road Warriors, let me tell you something, Hawk. When I get through with you, Paul Ellery's going to have a real job. And that's carrying the respirator so you can go. I just got through with the world champion. Now, Ricky Martin and all you little girls in your training underwear. Ricky Martin, Robert Gibson. If those girls that follow you around ever want to find out what a real man's all about, you have to look up Ric Flair, Tully Blanchard, Jim Cornette, or the infamous, James J. Dillon. Whether you like it or not, I just happen to be custom made. Tony, you can pick one of these up for about $1,100. Woo! Ric Flair, Rocky Island, brother.
The world champion.
Hey, come here, smart guy. You got nothing to say, huh? Congratulate Tully Blanchard. Go for it, guys. Woo!
Let's go to the ring.